Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone. The Bastards are back for this midweek edition of the podcast. We are brought to you in part by the Minute Media Podcast Network. The Red Sox just wrapped up a three-game set against the Tampa Bay Rays, dropping the series 2-1. It is their fifth straight series loss. They are 5 games out of the lead in the American League East. Yankees are roughly 2 or 3 games out. They're still playing the White Sox in the Field of Dreams game. As always, a quick disclaimer for any first-time listeners, this is not a homer podcast. We call it how we see it. When the Red Sox are dominating, we will celebrate that. When they are getting destroyed, we will be critical and at times savagely blunt. If you are easily offended, press the stop button immediately. But for those who embrace it, let's get rolling. I am Terry Cushman coming to you from Lewiston, Maine. You can harass me on Twitter at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. Co-hosting with me tonight from the Mile High City of Denver by way of Quincy, Massachusetts, Andrew Dwan. Andrew?
What's going on, guys? Obviously nothing great, right? The Red Sox are kind of the same status as the city of Denver is right now, just like fully on fire, smoke everywhere, just warning signs. We've had the worst air quality in the world the last week straight, so if I sound a little raspy, I do apologize.
We're getting some, apparently there's some fires in Canada going on. So our air quality with the humidity here in New England is not great.
Just cakes and blankets onto you, and it's the humidity too.
Yeah, tomorrow's going to be in the mid-90s all the way up in Maine. So, also joining us tonight from the nation's capital by way of Newport, Rhode Island, Job Goddard. Job?
How we doing, everybody? I was at tonight's game, so I'm very excited to break down this series with you guys and the dumpster fire that it was for two-thirds of it.
Yeah, you know, 3 wins so far. Friday will be August 13th. Not good. I mean, we're having a 2020 month, it feels like. Not a whole lot of winning, so. Andrew, your thoughts?
I mean, the truest definition of the dog days of summer going on right now sucks. Job, how much is a beer at Fenway these days? Under 13? Okay, that's actually not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Beer, they're $10.50 if you get it from the guy who walks around with beer on his head.
Ah, because they know you're not going to get that 50 cents back, so they can just jack it up. You're going to give them 11. Exactly. And boom.
They know you're going to make 11.
It's a good move. Probably get a good free agent out of that extra 50 cents from a million people this year.
Oh, yeah. But you know how I am. Ever get up during the game at Fenway. Not for any reason, at any point, until the last out, I'm in my seat.
Yeah. So
they get like an extra $3-4 from me over the course of the inning because I don't want to go to, you know, I don't want to go wait in line. And then the hot dog guy gets an extra couple of dollars, and the, you know, go down the line. The peanut guy gets an extra couple bucks. I'm out an extra like $20 because I refuse to go wait in lines.
They know how to do it. They've mastered it. Larry Lucchino is smiling listening to this somewhere.
You guys probably won't like this section as much as I do, but I kind of like to sit in the Coke seats. I like that elevated view. And right behind that.
Are those?
They're in the second deck almost all the way to the end on the left field side.
Oh, okay.
Where the monster is, but a little bit.
I don't think those were around when I moved out in 20. Like, I was – the last game I went was – it was a Josh Beckett versus CC Sabathia matchup in, like, April. It was on the monster seats. I don't even know if that Coke section was around back then.
I think it was the Coke sign. Yeah, because I got the O – no, that's the 04 panoramic one. But what I like about it, though, is you have to like the elevated view to sit up there to begin with. But you're kind of at the end of the line up there on that second deck, and you have your own concession area almost right behind you.
Oh, I like that.
It's never mobbed. There's a bathroom right there. So it's
– I like the elevation, too, especially at Fenway.
Yeah, yeah, I like it. And the tickets, we always get it on a third-party app, but they end up being between like $65 and $75.
Jesus Christ! Oh man, you guys would not know. You wouldn't want to know what I pay out here. I stand right above the bullpen, like $8.
Yeah. I mean, you could sit. We've sat in straightaway center for like $30, and I can still see balls and strikes even with my eyes. But the only problem is
I can't even see home plate.
Really?
Forget it. I'm so blind. I'm like watching the scoreboard the whole time if I sit in center. So I can't sit in center anymore.
Yeah, if you don't have good eyesight, then you probably don't want to sit out there. But the one major drawback is those are some of the cheaper seats, and if you're like in the middle of your row towards the end of it rather, you're getting up every 30 seconds so someone's 8-year-old can go to the bathroom or something.
Oh, I hate that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's what I don't like about it, but yeah, so anyway, so we're going to get into another kind of tough series. I've definitely got some strong thoughts on it, where the team is. Perhaps you gentlemen do as well. Going to have some roster decisions coming up, so there's going to be some trimming of the fat, as Andrew said in the pre-show. And speaking of trimming, attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Boston. Do we have a pew problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation brand new lawnmower 4.0. Kick your pubes to the next planet in the performance package. Oops. That's awkward. My phone shut off on me. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. The fourth generation trimmer also features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. Ouch. Thanks to their advanced skin safe technology, the Lawnmower 4.0 also has a 7,000 RPM motor, a multifunction on-off switch, which can engage a travel lock and is even waterproof. Get 20% off free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. For a clean Trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you.
That just reminded me of something, and it is Red Sox related. Does anyone else remember like those interviews, Jake Peavy definitely gave one where he said he put Icy Hot on his balls before pitching. And I think Clemens did too. And because they like didn't want to be comfortable and they wanted to be all antsy. So now, I mean, maybe the Red Sox are getting a little too comfortable. Their bullpen pitch is getting a little too comfortable using the Manscaped. And they got to go to some a little more abrasive and brash to get them through the 6th through 8th inning, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised an Alabama guy like Jake Peavy would be messing around with Icy Hot.
Now you put Spider Tack on there.
One of my favorite stories I heard about Peavy was he and Przinski in Chicago. They were both White Sox and, you know, often battery mates. And they got into it one game. And it was pretty public, so naturally the beat writers in Chicago wanted to know what happened. So they go up to Peavy, and they're like, what was that fight with Przinski about? And he goes, oh, well, we were just fighting about, like, a hunting trip, and we were arguing over which animal was, like, the tougher kill. And so the beat writers are like, oh, all right, well, let's go get AJ's side. And AJ's like, oh, we were arguing about college football. He's an Alabama guy. I'm a Florida State guy. So their stories weren't
straight. Both more believable than Mets saying that there was a raccoon in the dugout. Yeah. That was earlier this year.
Yeah. Had they only rehearsed it, it would have been really passable. But, yeah, that was McNeil and Lindor in the Mets dugout. But they're having a whole lot of issues, much like us. But – so getting into the series Tuesday night, Red Sox lost that one 8-4 with Eduardo Rodriguez pitching. Rodriguez did pitch pretty well in that start. Wednesday night was probably the highest scoring Red Sox output we've seen all season, just off the top of my head. That was 20-8. It was 20-1 going into
highest
the night.
Highest since 2015.
Highest since 2015. All right. And Nathan Eovaldi got that start. And then finally today in the finale, Red Sox lose that one 8-1. Offense, complete no-show. Two hit. And by two hit, I mean hit only two balls. Houck got the start in that one. We'll be getting into him shortly. I just want to say this about today before we do get into studs and duds. And we're going to start with the dud side since that's since we lost the series. But you score 20 runs, and then Tampa brings in all of their B-level guys with the exception of McHugh, who's pitched very well all season in high leverage. But that Rasmussen kid, I'm not familiar with him. He got the start. Yeah, he was nasty, but Red Sox completely shut down with the exception of Devers. Chargois, if that's how he pronounces it, not that familiar with him. Head, Sheriff. None of their best pitchers showed up in this game, and we hit two balls after scoring 20 runs the night before. Just a complete loss of momentum. This was ugly. This was an ugly way to end the series, and I felt okay about it coming into it. I thought, okay, we might win one. We might cruise into the Orioles series with a little bit of momentum, and just fell right out of the sky.
I mean, do you want me to lead off?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm switching it up. It's Liam Hendricks who just let up 4 runs to the Yankees. Oh, my God. All right, but real talk. Yaxel Rios, I'm not even going to bother looking at his stat line that I have in front of me. That was just – that ball that Mike Zunino hit was just unbelievably crushed. That was like that one Hunter Renfro hit last year against the Red Sox, and the one I think Ab Duvall might have put one onto the pike too against them. It was probably against like Kyle Hart or whoever those scrubs were. It was just absolutely demolished. It wasn't even, you know, a contestable pitch. There was no reason to throw it. His days are numbered. whatever. They gave up nothing for him. They needed some bodies for the bullpen because they did go through, they have been going through a stretch here where they've run into some injuries. Like, please come back soon, Darwin's in. And yeah, he's got good stuff at times, but he can't harness it, and it's not going to play in a first division like the AL East. He's not a first division regular. He's a second or third division regular at best, and that won't play, and I don't think we'll have to see him play much longer.
Yeah, I was at today's game. He threw meatballs for the entirety of his performance. I wasn't happy he was in the game to begin with, to be frank. I had some issues with how Cora managed today's game. But Rios has been a seesaw ride, really. It's like every time I'm ready to give up on him, he'll go out there and shut some guys down. And then every time I think he's starting to like put something together, he goes out and gets shelled. So the unreliability, Matt Andrees 2.0, I'm all done with both of them. I hope he enjoys AA Portland or a different roster at this point pretty soon, because I think his roster spot is worth more than he is.
I don't have a ton to add on Rios. Job, you mentioned a seesaw. He was terrible today, but pitched very well in one inning in Wednesday's game, the 20-8 game. He had a full inning. Didn't give up a hit or a walk, struck out one, kind of cruised through the inning. And then today, like you said, just kind of fell off the cliff and gave up a couple of runs over two innings. We're going to get into the bullpen mostly on the next episode of Deep Dives. There's tons to go over. We'll debate whether maybe his roster spot is up. Perhaps maybe Robles or Davis, although Davis, I believe, does have options. But we're going to get into all of it. A big topic in that episode will also be Matt Barnes, which we'll be getting into in depth as well. So be on the lookout for that one 24 hours after this episode. Job, your dud for the series.
My dud's going to be Marwin Gonzalez. It'll surprise a lot of people that we're going with the offense in a series where they scored 20 runs in one of these games. But Marwin has just been super inconsistent. He's putting the ball in play occasionally. A lot of weak contact, though, a lot of weak ground balls. And I just don't see the value of having him in the lineup. He was 2-for-8 in the series. His two hits were in the game where we scored 20 runs. And I believe one of them was off a position player. So when I look at it like that, I just don't understand how he can be hitting sixth in the lineup at this point. It's a waste of a roster spot to have him unless he's going to be a late game defensive replacement. And I understand there's some injuries going on, and that's probably why he's still here. But if he's still here in 3 weeks when we're up against it and we're maybe – hopefully not playing for a wild card, but we're probably going to be playing for a wild card. And if he's in the lineup, it's like a free out, similar to what Franchi Cordero was early on in the season.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they have guys on the roster that were never intended to be fully on the roster at all. Like, it was supposed to be one of them at a time, not all three of them. When it comes down to, well, Danny Santana is no longer there, but just as an example, I have no problem if they kept Marwin on this team and he came in the ninth inning to, you know, defensive replacement.
Yeah, totally he was fine with it. Reese.
Yeah,
Reese,
exactly.
Right.
And, you know, I honestly would trust him in the outfield over Duran, if we're being frank here. We need some bodies to come back because Schwarber – freaking rain tonight, man. Maybe they're going to have him play the doubleheader in Worcester tomorrow. But we need him. We need Verdugo back, who was on his way. He probably could have played if it was a night game. The roster's just going to look so much deeper in a few days because right now we're just getting nothing, literally nothing. And Marwin was actually solid at the beginning of the season, and it looked like it was going to be adequate move, which, I mean, they gave him pennies. They have to figure it out. Who's going to take some spots over? Because I'm all set with seeing a bunch of those guys that are on the back end of the roster.
About Schwarber, just in the last few minutes, he is expected to play tomorrow in Pawtucket, Worcester rather. And there's going to be a doubleheader, so how much of it he plays is still up in the air. They are going to finalize it tomorrow, but he will be in Worcester tomorrow. So any shot of just simply calling him up is not likely, at least.
Yeah, that really sucks that it rained there, because it sounded like it was going to be a one-day thing. That really does suck that he couldn't get on the field tonight.
Yeah. Before I give my Marwin take, because I'll forget, did Santana get DFA'd or something? I haven't seen anything.
No, he's still going through his rehab.
He's still on the rehab.
Okay. All right.
I wouldn't be surprised if they move him to the 60-day DL instead of DFAing him. It wouldn't surprise me if he moves to the 60-day in a couple of days here. But I don't think that we see him in a Red Sox uniform again.
Zach Britton just gave up a two-run home run.
Nice, and that's the final.
White Sox just won. Eight.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Wow, there we go.
Just popped up on my screen.
All right, tonight's not so bad, because that was about to get really not good for a second. That's demoralizing.
Toronto is down 5-0 to Los Angeles at the moment.
Good.
That's also Word. A good sign.
They can come back, though, so I'm not going to hold my breath on that one for now. So as far as Marwin goes, I mean, Franchi could get option. There's so many different scenarios that could go into play. My feelings wouldn't be hurt either way, but this is kind of a weird thing to bring up, but Marwin was a 264 hitter 2019, 2017, 303 hitter. Those were the two World Series years for the Astros. And and also an on-base percentage in 2017 of .377. I mean, how off the charts is that compared to what we've been seeing? So what I'm saying here is .211 in 2020 with the Twins with a .286 OBP, basically hitting about the same .205 with a .285 on-base percentage. He hasn't been the same since the trash can stuff.
Yeah,
you can say his rise in MLB was entirely due to that whole scandal, and he hasn't been good 100%.
Since. Yeah, roll it out.
He can't hit a curveball. Actually embarrassing.
I mean, let's call for what it is too. If this was one of the signings that was purely Cora, this was Cora's boy. He wanted him. He wanted that veteran leadership and thought he might be able to bring a little something to the table, but he hasn't been, especially after he got hurt, I think the first time. It's just been not zero since that date and time.
Well, when you think about Schwarber coming back, Arroyo shouldn't be too far behind him. I wouldn't be shocked if he is one of the moves, though.
I'm cool. I'm good with it.
It's
I will still believe in Franchi, but send him down. Send down half these guys. I wouldn't mind going to a shorter bench. I cannot wait for Arroyo to come back is what it comes down to. I think I was talking about this last week too. I think Arroyo makes a world of difference. As we've seen, he brings energy, he brings depth, and he brings everything they need.
If he can stay healthy for more than 5 minutes. I tried so hard to be an Arroyo guy, but it's impossible for me to not really be a pessimist. And I get that some of the injuries have been flukish, but you look at that outfield collision that he got into with, I think, Kike or whoever the
center. That's who it was.
It was Kike. And the balls off the hands. I mean, these weren't serious injuries. They didn't require surgery or any extensive treatment.
Thank God.
I hate to keep going back to 2004-2007, but these are the types of things that some of these guys might have grinded through, and I just don't think he has the toughness to be And, you know, an MLB player.
I don't know about that. I mean, he getting hit on the hand in the same spot twice, that is something else. And I literally, from Denver, felt his groin, like, injury. that was a soft tissue injury,
which
it's never going to get hard again after that thing. That was bad.
I really think that he has the ability to, with some luck, stay healthy. But freak injuries, I mean, anyone can have a freak injury. So the two balls getting hit on the hand, I don't really blame him for that. The hamstring, it's not like he was running the bases and pulled his hamstring. He was playing first base and stretching out, which is not a position he's ever played before, and had a little bit of another injury. So it's really just bad luck. It's not a conditioning injury. So to me, they don't go in the same category. If you continue to pull your hamstring because you're running in the outfield, that's one thing, right? But if you're stretching out for a ball at first and you never play first, that makes sense.
Didn't we all know, like, that kid growing up, too, that always had the cast on, always had something wrong with them? You know, there's just some people that just are built that way where they're susceptible to getting messed up. It's like, how did that kid just break his arm? Like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense, but evidently, he's one of them, and he just happens to be a world-class athlete, which that sucks. That's super unfortunate for him.
I'm just talking about a playoff run where we need to depend on some stability at that position and having him presumably hitting sixth to eighth somewhere in the order, and we just can't count on him. I'm uncomfortable with it. This might not be the best example because he was a pitcher, but you knew Clay Buchholz was going on the DL one or two times minimum at some point in the season. And I don't know how many times we got stung by that because he'd be pitching really well. And he was
another one of those guys.
Who was the next man up? He definitely, I think, had a toughness problem. He just wasn't a tough guy. Like some of
his
the other
body
guys.
Was weird. Like when he went to the hospital that time, what did he get, a belly button? No, that was Sale
in the playoffs.
Who knows? Buchholz probably got a belly button ring too. But he like had this weird issue. I remember sports media,
cradling issue with his kid. You mean?
And then what happened?
In 2013.
Well, I mean, there's always going to be some of those, right? It's like the David Price in the carpal tunnel. There's always
a load of crap too. Ass was on the mound that Saturday in Toronto. With Buchholz, he was cradling his kid awkwardly when he fell asleep in the 2013 season. Is that what you meant?
No, he was in the hospital for a bit. He had like a hospital stretch.
Oh, I think I remember that. Yeah.
And I remember 98.5 was like super irresponsible. They're like, what if he's on drugs like meth? And it was like, dude, come on. Like, you can't say that.
Yeah, that might.
Who knows?
I forget what year that was. I think we were out of it the whole year, and that's why it wasn't memorable because we were getting killed anyway. But I have serious concerns about Arroyo, and if we could get the guy that's been healthy, that shows us what he can do when he's healthy, I should say. That's the guy I thought was going to have that breakout year, and he's played 70 games, and we just played game 116 or something like that, you know, out of the 162. So I'm an extreme pessimist with him, and I hate that I am, but I can't help it.
I mean, so were the Giants, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's the intrigue.
This is the fourth, at least the fourth organization he's been with. But so we'll see what happens when Arroyo does get called up, when Schwarber gets called up, who's going to get bounced and whatnot. I'd love to see Bobby.
I hope it matters. I hope it still matters. Let's put it that way.
I want Bobby.
A couple more losses, it won't.
Yeah. So anyway, let's see any dishonorable mentions to get into. Vasquez, unfortunately, was on bereavement leave. I'm not even sure the details of that, but was 0 for 4 with 3 strikeouts in his one game.
Yeah. Did you, Terry, I don't know, did you watch on TV or were you radioing it today?
Radio.
In Joe, you obviously were at the game. They made a comment about how Hunter Wendelstedt, the home plate ump, it got caught in the hot mic telling Plawecki to tell him that his like thoughts and prayers were with him. So it's definitely someone close. I mean, that's what the bereavement list is. So
I mean, I was thinking
hopefully everything's good with them.
It might have been just a grandparent that was older or whatever. I mean,
yeah, I mean, there's never a best case.
No, I know.
I guess that might be that.
You don't like to lose people, but I don't think it was like a child. I think we would know by now.
Yeah, I really hope not.
Yeah. We shouldn't even really be speculating anyway, but. Franchi Cordero, pretty painful throughout the series, 1-for-8 with 5 strikeouts. So kind of reverting back to his earlier season self at the plate. And I guess that will about do it. Well, actually.
Can we just like make it clear that the entire bullpen belongs in that conversation?
Oh yeah, well we're getting into it.
Like,
next
I know we're
going to
cover the deep dive.
Yeah, yeah, there were some.
I'm giving you know who else?
Go ahead.
Plawecki. Plawecki today was bad because who knows what that game would have turned into if they didn't that throw he threw out to Duran in center field. That was so
brutal.
Stupid. He had that base stolen. And now it's 26, or at least last time I checked, 26 of 29 guys have stolen successfully on the year against Plawecki. And I like Plawecki. I think he deserves some more time, but maybe it's at first base until Schwarber's ready. And I don't know.
I'm going to be honest. I thought that Plawecki today was bad behind the plate, but he had one of the two hits. It was a single, but it could have easily been a double if it didn't bounce off that wall there at behind the third base bag and kick out to the left fielder. It could have easily been a double, and he's at least putting the ball in play, which is more than we can say for most of the lineup.
And I also he couldn't get on the same page with Robles, which led to the balk. He like gave him the let's go back through it, and it kind of threw Robles off, and I thought he got off pretty easily on that. I mean, Robles obviously a newer guy on the team. I don't know. It was a weird situation. Maybe call time if you're the catcher and go out there and get on the same page and don't risk it with the bases chucked. I don't know. I watched that and I was like, oh god damn it! Why didn't he just call time? But neither broadcaster brought it up, and I was a little interested by that.
Perhaps the best alignment would simply to DH him, like I think was the case in game one of the series. Put JD in the outfield, and you got a lot less Duran in that situation. But
thank you for reminding me about that. JD deserves some hate because that first game he threw into third for no freaking reason.
Yeah.
I think it was Lau or someone come into second, and that's what pretty much cost him the game because that was the winning run.
It would have been a one-run inning.
Leading could have stopped.
Yep. Yeah, would have been a one-run inning. Yeah, I noticed that
as
too.
As far as the dishonorable mentions, I mean, there's a lot when you lose 5 series in a row, right?
We're like 12 guys.
We're like 12 guys deep, right? Half the roster. Alex Cora is at the top for me, and he will be until he makes the right move. And it's not Heim Bloom because I want people to listen to the rest of the take, the rest of the episode. The second you say it's Heim Bloom's fault, everybody in Boston seems to turn you off now. So we're going to blame Cora instead, but it's really Heim Bloom's fault.
The beat writers are going after Bloom now. So
finally, it's about time
because
there's some serious issues with this team that we'll get into mostly in episode 2.
I do want – let me just raise this question, and it's for the future, but – Is Cora ever just going to get frustrated with what he has to work with? I mean, his bench is trash.
I think
as
the
far
answer
as
is
offense.
Hell yes.
But I don't know. Because honestly, the guys that like won him games in 2018, they're still paying for. Literally, like that's their salaries could be used to actually make this team better in spots that they've had weaknesses. So I don't think so.
Though, that they signed a shit.
No, I agree. No, I agree. It's just like they're paying for past sins still, and it absolutely sucks that they have all this dead weight, which you know, kind of fitting with the Orioles pretty much buying out Chris Davis's like $1 quadrillion contract today. But yeah, there's just
something dollars.
There's so much dead, dead assets on the squad, and that's that they managed to somehow, well, actually couldn't with Hanley and Pablo, and that's finally off. And now you're dealing with Dustin's, who isn't too much, and David Price's, who is more than Dustin's. And that's not good. That's $26 million you could use to make this team so much better than it is.
There's no way Chaim Bloom is
I'm tired of hearing that.
There's no way Chaim Bloom is sitting at home right now thinking he feels good about the moves he made, because I don't think he intended to be in first place as far into the season as late July. And he stuck with the moves he made. As far as the division goes, he finished in fourth place at the trade deadline as far as moves goes. Everybody else outworked him. And yeah, some of them paid big prices, but there wasn't a ton of creativity there. And if you ask me, the biggest mistakes were really before the season started. If this roster was better at the start of the season, when these guys only cost money and not prospects, I think we'd be in better shape right now.
But there, he's been also balancing the budget. Like, if you let him go over this, they could have easily bought out guys, just paid their salaries, and given up so far lesser prospects. And that would have brought him into that.
He doesn't watch the big league club.
Of course he does.
You know,
that's not true.
He wants the minor league clubs to be ready to feed this team in 3 years.
Well, he also wants assets to be able to get good players, and he hasn't had them.
I just don't think he ever wants to deal from the stack. He's like Sherrington. And I don't blame
him. What stack was he? Did he have to deal from? We had a 25th ranked farm system. Yes.
We did, but at this deadline, we had some
good. I would love it.
You can move on to Blaze George.
Then you're going, but then you're back to shit.
Move on from one of them to get somebody worth something. You don't have to move on from
everybody.
That's
not true. If you look at any of the players that were moved, the equivalent for Kimbrel was Cassis. You're not doing that. Downs is having an off year because they aggressively promoted him after he skipped a level, and he's only had four at bats versus guys that have been older than him. And he should get demoted just to get into some similar competition. You're not going to trade Nick York and Blaze Jordan. That was the package. That would have been the equivalent package for Anthony Rizzo, who, the way it's lined up, Schwarber's going to be part of the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry before Rizzo is. Rizzo got his ass set out for 2 weeks. And the Padres traded for some schmuck. Can't even think of his name. And they had to give up their fourth-ranked prospect in a far better system. So he'd just be at square one all over again if they traded all these assets away. And you can't do that.
I would have spent the money before the season. I don't have a huge problem with the trade deadline. I wonder to myself if he could have been a little bit more creative and made something happen that way. We'll never know. I mean, how much was CJ Krohn going to cost? And then have Schwarber go to the outfield.
No, that's different, because the Rockies didn't trade anyone. Yeah. They said they're not. They held on to Story. They're run like trash.
They're not
the people
giving.
Out here are outraged.
They're not giving Krohn the qualifying offer. So that one's insignificant.
He was only making $1 million. So, they didn't give up Story. They didn't trade up. They didn't trade Gray.
Those make sense. Keeping Krohn doesn't make sense.
No, none of them did. So, Terry, I will agree with you, and I will say that if the Red Sox ownership had a crystal ball and Chaim Bloom can be like, look, we're going to be in first place at the deadline. Let me spend in the offseason. I think he absolutely would have done it.
Last season, if he had a crystal ball and could see to late July and be like, geez, I'm going to be in first, we don't have some of these guys on the roster. He would have made better moves last season.
Yeah, the financial aspect of it sucks. He's handcuffed right now.
What was that gonna cost us though? I mean,
the tax. We would have lost.
Fabian didn't sign anyway, so that would have been the pick we lost.
Doubt it. But then they probably wouldn't have drafted Marcelo Mayer if they didn't have the second round pick. They wouldn't have taken him. They would have had to go under slot at that point.
That's not even.
So,
a huge, well.
Let's make it clear here. We talked about this team as ranging anywhere from a 75-win team for Charlie to a 74 to an 84-win team for some of us on the show, right?
I think Andrew was 86.
I had 87, yeah, 86 or 87.
Something like that.
And right, and I don't think any of us thought this team would be in first place come the All-Star break.
Well,
Chaim Bloom didn't think they would be at first place come the All-Star break. He thought they would be sellers at the deadline. If you look at the moves that he made and the
contracts, they wouldn't have bought Ottavino. I don't agree with that.
Why not? $9 million, you're under the tax, and then you could sell Barnes. Barnes would have been worth a pretty penny of prospects. And if you look at the expiring contracts on the Red Sox roster, including Erod and Barnes, the two big ones, right? And then JD can opt out. If you move those three pieces, we have a top five farm system in baseball, the way that
we already do.
The way these guys' price tags are.
He rebuilt it. We're going to have a top five going into next year. They have three top 20 guys.
So we would have had the top.
But without selling and remaining competitive, he literally rebuilt a top five system.
What I'm saying here, Andrew, is that he didn't think that he would be in a position to buy. And so therefore, he didn't set up this team with some moves than
then
long-term salary commitment.
Then why did they go after Kluber? Why did they sign Garrett Richards?
Because you know, somebody's got to pitch.
I don't think he was convinced.
He could have spent $1 million on someone. They went right up to the tax.
But if the tax is the issue, and I believe it is.
It is.
Then
that's
not
Blue.
No doubt. It's on ownership.
That's on every ownership.
I can't call for the firing of John Henry. He owns the damn team.
Oh, I don't care about that. I think it's a baseball problem. I don't think it's a Red Sox ownership. And they spend more than every other team every single year except for the Dodgers. It's a stupid ass thing that they have this ridiculous tax that gets players paid and gives a better product. I think it's the dumbest thing, and I think it holds back teams from going all out. That's the issue at hand.
I don't think ownership, a lot of people are making ownership out to be the bad guys as far as to why the deadline played out the way it did, why the current roster looks the way it does. I firmly believe that this is Bloom's team. He's calling the shots. And I think he basically punted. He gave us a little bit of a chance, but I think he punted coming into the year thinking we're probably
That's
not
exactly
going to be that good.
At, Terry.
Yeah.
And, but they had.
He punted.
$3 million in cap space. But look at his free agent signings. They were honestly great. For other than Richards,
Perez wasn't great.
Well, Perez was on the team last year. That was a re-sign. But you look at Kike. You look at Renfro. Those were amazing.
I'm hot.
I'm not saying that this whole thing is Heim's fault. And Terry, I'm going to let you go.
No, you go.
I'm saying the whole thing is Heim's fault. I just think that Chaim Bloom could have done more season to help this team. And the reason that he didn't is because he was looking at it and saying, I don't want to add any contracts that I can't move if we're in last place come July.
That's a fair point. Here's one other thing, and this is what frustrates me. When we made our picks as far as the division winners and who's going to the World Series on the American League side, we were all over the board. And there wasn't one bona fide, this is the team that's going to the World Series. The White Sox, I thought, looked pretty good on paper, but I'm like, well, with La Russa, the fact that they're a trash organization, not much, you know, better than the Mets, really, as far as optics and you know, midseason meltdowns and whatnot. I wasn't a believer in the White Sox. And at present, I think the Astros are probably going to be the team to go to the World Series. But I wasn't thinking that at the start of the season. There wasn't one bona fide team that was a surefire. Like on the other side, the Dodgers. Chaim Bloom had a golden opportunity to outfox all these GMs in the American League and really put his stamp on it. And he didn't do it. He didn't do it. We ended up with a lot of the guys we hate that we just brought up. So it's frustrating. It's extremely frustrating. Next year's free agent market is a little bit wonky. You know, there's some pitching available.
I don't even think you can look at it, Terry, because there's a new CBA coming and everything's going to change.
True. That's true as well.
Which is good, because if there's still a tax, they can blow by it now.
That's what I was about to say. There's no excuses if there is a tax. Like, if there's a guy, an impact bat, and you can have him for 3 to 4 years, say, and maybe the average annual value is going to be $20 or $25 million, I don't want to hear the word luxury tax one time. Anything short of a goal of going to the World Series next year, that's a massive disappointment to me. That's a massive disappointment.
I agree with you. But I'm saying at that point, that's not on the GM or the president. That's strictly the wallets of the owners. And I think that's a shame if they want to do that.
They're going to be all in, because Bloom is getting killed right now. He's taking bullets right now. And he came out, yesterday and said, well, Twitter isn't the end of the world. But the beat writers are roasting him, too. All the guys that set the narratives for the fan base are roasting him. So there's no way ownership's going to want to sit through a whole winter with anything other than the mindset, we better win next year.
I wouldn't want to if I was Bloom either. He's taking some heat because, you know, it's like, all right, you walk in last
he's
year.
He's taking heat because he keeps making crappy moves.
But, he had to come in and do the most unpopular move in Boston sports history.
Yeah.
Last year he had a negative budget to work with, literally a negative budget. This year he had to make chicken salad out of chicken shit. And then next year, if I'm him, I'm out on the chest, be like, listen, we've been under for 2 years now. We have to go over the tax. I don't care what the penalties are. We can afford the hit of losing a draft pick, getting moved 10 spots down. And they can do that now because they have a farm system built back up. And even if they lose their first round pick, they have two high second round – well, one high second round pick and also another second round pick now that they didn't sign Judd Fabian. So they set their bonus pool up well next year to lose a first round pick. So you can sign a guy or do –
Here's my question, though, Andrew. Do you think that this is acceptable from Chaim Bloom? Like, just one – like, do you
yes.
think that the position he's in has been acceptable?
Absolutely. He literally brought us two great players in free agency. He had to stay under the tax in the trade deadline. And how else he can do it? He got the best bat on the market. Nelson done shit. Anthony Rizzo has COVID.
Is a factor you can't control.
Okay, but Jonathan Schoop wasn't traded. 10 games. Three of the first basemen we thought were going to be available were not. Santana, the Royals said no. Scope, the Tigers said no. They said no, we're extending him, and they did that. The Rockies said, what the fuck is baseball? We don't know what's going on. And they kept CJ Cron and the rest of their team, and just like goddamn idiots. So, yeah, they went out. They got Kyle Schwarber for Aldo Ramirez, who is battling some injuries right now. They lost a lot of their trade assets before the season. And with injuries and whatnot. So, yeah, I think when you have a finite amount of financial resources, yes, I think he's done exactly what he could have because there were.
So then I'm going to ask this. I'm going to leave Theo out of it because he's obviously the best general manager that we've ever seen. Ben Sherrington, Dave Dombrowski, Chaim Bloom. That's like two guys that are on very opposite ends of the spectrum than Chaim Bloom. You got to rank them 1, 2, 3. You know, one being the guy you want the most and 3 being the guy you want the least.
Well, definitely not Sherrington. I mean, we saw his drafts were just terrible. And he also signed ridiculous free agent signings. Those were terrible. He got two guys bought out. Dombrowski just kicked the can down the road. Dombrowski's the guy that if I have an 88-year-old owner, I'm bringing him in because I know he's going to give me a World Series in 3 years and then just salt the earth like on his way out because he left no assets. So, yeah, if you need a World Series appearance or like multiple ALCS, NLCS appearances in 3 years, I'm bringing Dombrowski because he will trade everyone, which I think is honestly easier than people give him credit for. But Bloom is rebuilding, and I'm 100% fine with how he's rebuilt the system and the assets he's gotten, because building a farm system on the fly while contending is not – those things don't go hand in hand.
So here's my thing, though. If you are focused on building the farm system and it's at the expense of the big league club,
is it, though?
You deserve your job.
Is it actually at – because what reliever would you have wanted? Kimbrel? Because then they're above the tax. And then you lose your
– I would have gone and got Richard Rodriguez from the Pirates.
Did they trade him?
Yeah, he went to the Padres maybe.
Oh, you're correct. They did trade him.
And what he was –
the Padres, though. The Padres went and got the Nationals closer, Davis, I think.
Oh, yeah, and that's who they traded their, like, fourth overall prospect.
Hudson for their four overall. That was
– The Braves, did the Braves get him?
Out there. Yes, the Braves went and got
okay, and they traded up.
Okay.
God, drawing a blank.
Let me say this about Sherrington. I'm pretty sure he built the farm system under Theo. So he drafted for Xander, Mookie, all that. You look at the Toronto system, he was their top minor league guy for 2 or 3 years. He brought in Teoscar Hernandez, who murders us every time. Lourdes Gurriel. So I think he's a smart executive that had ownership breathing down his neck, Bill James breathing down his neck. I thought he made a lot of smart moves to that 2013 roster, and it worked out, and it's fine. I mean, go ahead and disagree. The ultimate verdict will be 5 or 6 years from now.
That's what I was about to say.
I just look at it and I say, GM have had since Theo a World Series and gotten fired within 5 years of each other. Why does Bloom have such a long leash? It's because
It's been a year and a half.
Two and a half. I mean, 2.5 after the season.
Well, no, that'll be a full two.
Okay, well, so he's been here for parts of 3 seasons, but
that's fine.
Yeah. I take it back. Yeah, because he got hired after. He wasn't hired immediately after Dombrowski.
No.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
I
no,
take it back.
It's a long process. It's baseball. And, you know, Theo, for all the credit he gets, it was a different game back then. The Red Sox made a living off of qualifying offers back then, which used to – every single player – used to get an A or a B, a qualifying A or a B. And the Red Sox would always get about four of those guys at the deadline, and they weren't even that good, but they would give them a B at the end of the year, because that's what they would do. And the Red Sox would get a second-round pick. And that's how their farm system used to get built up so well. And they got all these guys. Every year in, year out, they had three first-round picks and, like, three second-round picks. And that's how Theo built it up. And Theo – was honestly one of the worst GMs in Chicago. He said, when he first signed on, he said, I'm going to build this to be a pitching factory was his quote. And he didn't develop one single starter for the Cubs. So I think there's a lot of revisionist history.
His free agency record wasn't good on both teams.
Atrocious.
Really. Yeah. The Hayward contract, especially in Chicago, he was the one guy who didn't get moved this year.
Right?
Yeah. All right. We're running late, so we're going to be talking about Chaim Bloom quite a bit over the next probably 6 weeks, hopefully for the better, but.
All right. Should I hop into my stud here?
Yeah, go
ahead. We can make this
one quick. Yep.
All right. Mine is the guy that has the highest WAR for AL pitchers in the league. And that's Nate Eovaldi. It's at 4.1. No one above him on the list if you go on Fangraphs. He's an absolute stud. Here, pulling up some Red Sox notes on Twitter. He also leads the AL in home runs allowed per 9 at 0.61, which is ridiculous. Second in K to walk rate at 5.36. He is coming through this year, and I'm not going to say anything about health because I'm not jinxing anything right now. Nate Eovaldi has been just an absolute gem all year long. last night he absolutely brought it. 10 strikeouts, I think it was, at the end of the day. And I couldn't have been happier. Kept the pitch count low. That's what they needed.
It was exactly what we needed. I know scoring 20 runs helps you win a ball game, but what we really needed was some length to rest some of these bullpen guys that are high leverage specifically, who really should not have been in there in a close game. We're going to talk about those guys in the second show that we do for deep dives. But without Eovaldi going seven, it's a whole different outlook. Even if the same final score shows up, right? Even if you score 20. If he goes five innings instead of seven innings, then you're putting an extra inning on Barnes and an extra inning on Ottavino, or an extra inning on Barnes and an extra inning on Taylor. And then they're not rested for this Baltimore series. They're not rested well enough to go for doubleheaders in New York. And you're putting a lot of stress on this already overtaxed bullpen that's two arms short. Not one arm short, two arms short, because we already talked about Rios and Davis. Both those guys have been terrible. It's exactly what we needed from Nate Eovaldi. He's been our stopper. I can't wait for him to take the ball in game two of an ALDS, or I would give him the ball in the wild card game.
I don't have a ton to add on Eovaldi. He's been extremely impressive. He's been on the dud side of our, studs side of our segment for much of the season. I know. I'm trying to get his innings pitched. So 133 innings pitched, which, scanning up through the list, this will be his third highest season in that category. So he's probably on pace for, what, at least 160, 170, I would think.
Yeah, he's kept my dreams, my prediction of no one above 170 or 175 alive.
Yeah.
And the Red Sox have a lot of games in hand, too. So they do have some off days coming up the rest of the year. So I'm really hoping they might be able to build in a skip week for him. Just, it wouldn't be the worst.
Well, you can bring up we got to win, though. So that's that. At this point, there's no higher priority. I think that's kind of a game changer. You didn't see any guys on Monday, by the way, or excuse me, Tuesday, because Monday was an off day. So you didn't see any guys on Tuesday get that extra day off. It was all hands on deck for the first time in a long time, going either into an off day or coming off of one, with the exception, of course, Verdugo, but that was paternity leave related, which apparently everything came out fine. And just to wrap up that part on Eovaldi, his second highest innings pitched of his career was 154 and a third. That was in 2015. So he's certainly on pace to eclipse that. And then 199 the season before that in 2014 with the Marlins was his highest. It's too bad he pitched just one more out. He would have had 200 innings, but fell one out short that season. So he won't get that far, but I figured he would have done at least a 4-week stint on the DL by now, injured list, whatever. So,
you can't be upset with anything he's given you this year. He's without a doubt been more durable than anyone anticipated, especially Terry. And he's been better than anyone had anticipated based on what we saw in 2020.
Absolutely. Who is your stud, Job?
I can't believe I'm saying this. I feel like I should be pinching myself. My stud for the first time this year, Bobby K. Dalbec.
Bobby!
K stands for strikeout, so those numbers are still up. But Bobby Dalbec had the best night of his career in game two. 5 RBIs in that game. He's currently got 200 at-bats. He's hitting .222 with 11 home runs and 46 RBIs. If you told me that was what we were going to get from Bobby Dalbec, I would have been upset because I wanted him to hit .230, maybe .240 this season. But he's brought his numbers up significantly. I'm not upset with it at all. He's hitting in his last 15 games a respectable .257, .381 OBP, and a .429 slugging. I'll take that. Power numbers still aren't really coming up. But I had to go to 15 games because his last 7 games he's hitting .376. And that's not really indicative of how good he's been. But .276 is really good from him right now. He's getting hot at a time when really we need him. His job is gone in a week. So he's fighting for his job, and it's good to see some fight from him. He was all over Tampa in this series. He did not play today in game three. I think rest him for one reason only. Give him something positive to look at coming out of a series. When was the last time that Bobby Dalbec came out of a series and the outlook was positive for the entirety of the series?
I don't even
recall.
It hasn't
been all season.
Nope. Minnesota. The Minnesota probably. Series earlier in the year.
Probably, right? Where he was 5-for-7 or something like that. So, for me, Bobby's my stud. Did not play in game one outside of a pinch running opportunity, and he did not play in game three. Cora's trying to keep him out of the lineup unless the matchup is favorable. I like that from Alex Cora. It's one of the few things I think he's doing right, is kind of piecing together this first base slot until Kyle Schwarber is ready, hopefully. I also think we need some help in the outfield, so we'll see which way we go with that. But Bobby Dalbec was fantastic in game two.
Nothing to add to that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Gonna give a prediction. Two home runs, 9 RBIs for Bobby in the Baltimore series coming up.
I hope so.
I'm Charlie might hate him more than me, and hate's a strong word. He might be rooting harder for Dalbec to get traded in the offseason, maybe like 1% harder than me. But it was good to see. It was in the middle of that offensive explosion. 5 ribbies. He even got intentionally walked. Like, the pitcher was like, I want no part of Bobby. Yeah, give me Duran.
And showed his toughness because he almost died after that hit by pitch, too.
Oh, yeah. When he kind of faked towards
the mound. Fake charged.
Yeah.
That was a good one. He's playing loose.
Yeah, but I still don't trust him in late inning clutch situations. And like I said, he's got no future in Boston if they definitely sign Devers, because Casas will get the other.
Nah, just go to Worcester, rake and trade. That's all you got to worry about.
That's what we want.
I mean, at this pace, right, hitting 220, 11 homers, no one's going to want you as your first baseman.
Right.
If he goes down to Worcester and he hits 280 and – based on what we know about Worcester, he'll probably have like 35 home runs. Can you move him somewhere? I hope so. I'd love to see that. And then Casas comes up and plays. I think that's more of a next deadline kind of move, more so than a off-season move, because I don't think Casas is going to be your first baseman at the start of next season.
Well, Schwarber has a mutual option. I think it's a mutual option, so I don't
know.
Which
he will decline if he's healthy. Based on his...
I don't know if one of those has ever been picked up in the history of baseball.
Yeah, I think the mutual option is going to be declined no matter what. Don't even bother talking about it as far as what his contract is.
You could be right, but the problem with waiting till next year, Bobby could fall on his face the first half and then have zero trade value, whereas he does have some at this very moment, I would say, you know, as the season's winding down. So
Terry, we talk about guys like Bobby like they're prospects because they're new to the big league club. Bobby Dalbec is 26 years old. This is pretty much is what you're going to get from him. He's not going to improve a whole lot between now and his peak of age 27 season or 28 season in 2 years. And if he does for somebody else, congratulate that team. They're extremely lucky. Thanks. Move on. It's one of those things where you can't expect much more than you're getting currently. And if you do, it's gravy.
I agree. He's not going to be much more than he is, but you're always going to have that one team that thinks their hitting program's going to fix him. And that's how the move gets made, I think. But we're running really deep right now, so I'm just going to gloss over some honorable mentions. Xander Bogaerts, 4-for-12, hit a home run, albeit off a position player, but very good throughout the series. Had a couple of walks in that 20-run game. Devers, 3-for-10, drove in a run today. Hunter Renfroe, 5-for-11, hit a huge dinger. Should have helped us win game one had the bullpen not imploded. Again, much more on that on deep dives. Connor Wong, 1-for-1 with a ribby in that one at bat. Eduardo Rodriguez looked very good. 5 1/3 innings. Gave up 4 hits, 2 earned runs, walked 1, struck out 8. That's pretty much par for the course for him on a positive outing. I wanted to talk about Tanner Houck this episode, but that does kind of fit in with our deep dives format. So we will be talking about Tanner Houck at least a little bit in the next episode. He was okay today. I had some issues when the third time through the order came up. And then finally, I guess I'll give the last one to Josh Taylor. Had a couple of decent outings out of the pen as well. And Salamora, actually, in game one, looked okay after a scare in his previous appearance where he left the game with an elbow injury, it seemed. But
That looked like it was going to be bad.
Yeah, but didn't
rubber band man.
Yeah, only missed a couple days and came back. So that's it for that. Let's just kind of briefly, that's going to be hard with Chris Sale being in the series, but we're facing the Orioles for the first time since it feels like April, probably May, but we got
first
a bunch
time
of
since May 5th, I believe.
May 5th, okay.
Cinco de Mayo.
We had 2 or 3 series, bam, 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 with them, and so it's been a while. But Spencer Watkins, who I admittedly have not seen pitch one single time, will be going up against Nick Pivetta. Watkins, 4.22 ERA on the season. Pivetta kind of in a little bit of a rhythm right now, so hopefully this should be a team. Well, they do have some guys that can hit, actually. Nonetheless, it should be somewhat of a solid outing for Pivetta.
Yeah, you just made that Orioles pitcher up, so I'm going to give that to the Red Sox. Okay. And my Bobby Dalbec prediction will let everyone know my feelings towards how this series is going to go.
Yeah, I am mostly hoping for – I mean, obviously we need a win in game one, but what I'm really looking for is 6 innings out of Nick Pivetta. And if it turns into an offensive slugfest, I still want Nick Pivetta. I don't care. I need 100 pitches and 6 innings from Nick Pivetta in this game. Our bullpen is absolutely gassed, and we have some doubleheaders still coming up. So I would really like to see the Nick Pivetta who faced the Orioles, his second appearance against them, and not the Nick Pivetta who got shelled in that first 3-game set of the season.
So I'm boldly going to make all of our picks for us. The Red Sox win this one because Spencer Watkins isn't going to pitch the game of his life. We hope to God he's not going to. It might be possible, actually, but we're going to officially vote against that. Game 2 of the series, Saturday, the game we have waited for almost 2 years. Jorge Lopez trotting into Fenway with his 5.75 ERA, just been getting killed all season long. He's 3-12 on the season. Will get the unlucky straw of facing Chris Sale. I think I know who we're picking in that one.
Yep, 3-13.
I don't even have a pick for this game because I don't care about beating a minor league pitcher. And Lopez is a minor league pitcher.
So is Chris Sale.
He's a single-A pitcher. TBD versus Eduardo Rodriguez on Sunday. Rodriguez pitches very well against the Orioles. So as long as nothing
Broom's
weird,
out.
Yeah, as long as nothing weird happens in the couple of games before, as far as momentum, that should be a win for the Red Sox. So that should be, I mean, we've lost 5 series in a row. If we lose with the guys we got in this series, every single one, and I said the Tampa series because I've been doing this thing on Twitter where I post the matchups and everything, all 3 games look good in that series, and we didn't come away with it. So,
well, Rasmussen is actually, I mean, I was there today. He looked great. He's actually kind of a stud for them. right now. 23 games. He's got a 3.9 ERA, 3.88 ERA over his last 25 starts. So he's actually been somewhat of a stud. So that matchup, I would not have loved for the Sox if I was picking on the Sunday show.
I'm not too upset about it. I think I'm the only one in like that's ever rooted for the Red Sox that hasn't hit any smashed any panic buttons yet. But if they don't take all three of these, oh crap, I should say two of three. But if they don't take all three of these, I'm gonna get a little concerned. But I'm still the schedule is about to get a lot easier after New York, which I think is gonna be a fun series. We finally get a Yankee series.
We get a Yankee series. And yeah, is going to be pitching in one of those doubleheader games.
I might get slightly concerned if they don't take all three of these.
Well, fair enough. All right, so we will cut you guys loose with that. 24 hours after this one, deep dives will be released, and then on Sunday night, Jason, Charlie, and myself will come back and talk about the Baltimore series and Chris Sale's start. Everybody have a good end of your work week and start to your weekend. Take care.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.